button, and then you just don't touch buttons, and we should be good. Nope.
You, who knows where we'll be?
That's right. And then just don't touch buttons, and we'll be fine.
And we'll be fine.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for being here. Lots of thought going into this of like, oh, there's so many more that are qualified to even teach something. So I really just invite the Spirit to be here because that's who the teacher is. And as you receive the inspiration from the Spirit that you jot it down, it's maybe things I say will trigger ideas and thoughts and things that you should do differently, try, just make a record of those because that's where the true learning comes from. Just a little bit about me. I got it figured out. Thank you. That's the official tech guy. So, a little bit about me. I'm from Shelley, Idaho, and we live on 3 acres out in the country and just have some space out there. I have 6 kids and an awesome husband. Hey, come on in, Lindsay. An awesome husband. We've been married almost 30 years and we've been homeschooling for almost 10, which is crazy because when I started this journey almost 10 years ago through tears, and if you haven't had, thank you for the head nod. You too have had tears. I'm sure we've all had tears as we have started our homeschool journey and as we pursue it, right? I remember telling my friend who was a homeschooler who was kind of holding my hand, I just broke down and I said, I have to do this for more than 10 years. My baby is 13 and so we've got about 5 years with her and I just thought, how can I do this? How can I keep this up? And here I am. Like, it's such a milestone for me to be 10 years in. Like, wow, I'm proud of myself for that. So I want to talk about kind of how I got here into homeschooling, and I'm sure it will help you reminisce with how you got into homeschooling and kind of just take the journey. That's what we're going to do. And the preparation to become a homeschooler started before I even knew that that's what I was being prepared for. It was the hindsight that showed me just how God led me to do this, led us to do this. But the beginning point, the first time I admitted that that's where we were going, it was a cold February night, and I was in Carl's Jr. Do you have moments in life where you know right where you were and maybe what you were wearing, all the things come rushing back. I know right where I was sitting in this Carl's Jr. My husband and I, we had just finished building our home where we live now. And we moved in on December 23rd. Is this doing its thing? Oh.
It just fell asleep probably.
Okay.
Do you want me to mess with it? Yeah.
Just let it.
We'll see how this goes. But we moved in December 23rd and it took till February for us to, I don't know what it's doing. For us to finally clean up the construction garbage, and we had loaded up his truck and we were taking it to his works dumpster to get rid of it. And we're 2 months there and we're sitting there. I know, right? The table, and through tears, I said after, sharing the latest moment with public school, I said through tears, oh, maybe we're just supposed to homeschool. And he said, yes, you can do it. You'll be great. You'll be fantastic. And that was his immediate reaction. And you're laughing because that's usually not the reaction you get from the husband when the mom says, I think maybe we should homeschool. It's usually like, oh, but you might ruin them. And how, you sure you can teach them all? But not my husband. No, he did. He said, you can do it. You'd be great. You're amazing. No one loves and cares for them like you do. And I remember pausing, wiping the tears and saying, you've known. You already knew this is where we were headed. He's like, well, you know, yeah, he's been praying for me to come around to this. And here I am overwhelmed with the idea of bringing all my kids home from public school and schooling them. I remember a paper that I wrote when I was a student at Utah State, and I was taking a teaching writing class. I was an English education major, and I took a teaching writing class, and this class started 3 weeks after my first child was born. And I had a different view of life, of the world. I was a mom now, and I was a senior in college. And I finished that class, and the end of the semester paper was to write how I would use the skills I'd learned in that class in the classroom. And the only thing I could focus on was how I was going to use those skills to teach my children. And so that's what I wrote the paper about. I'm going to use this skill to teach them, you know, work alongside them, to clean the bathroom, to show them how to, you know, it was perfect. I mean, I was going to do this mom thing just right, right? Finished the semester, and I was in Fred Meyer once again. I know right where we were, Logan, Utah, Fred Meyer. I know the aisle, and I ran into my professor, Brock DeCher, still remember his name. And he asked me how it was going. I don't know. It had been, well, Clarissa was in the shopping cart and she was sitting up. So she had to be at least 6 months old. And, how's it going? How's life? I said, oh, it's great. It's great. And yep, this is the baby that was born right before class started. La, la, la. And he said, so you're just going to be home with, you're just going to be home. You're not going to go teach. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to teach her and whoever comes after her. And he says, huh, well, it's just kind of hard because you'd be so good in the classroom. You'd be so good in the classroom. I said, well, thanks, Brock. Like, I'm going to be so good in my home. And then I proceeded through life and had five more kids, and I put them in school as they came. So when McKay, when we sat in that Cotterell's Jr. and he said I could do it, I flashed back to that. Oh, yeah, that was my intent all along. Why all of a sudden, because she turned five, did I think someone else was going to do that? Why would I change that? And I think it's a cultural thing. It's a system thing. So I talked about how I saw the path that led to that night at Carl's Jr. And it started about 5 years before that night. I could see the little things, just in addition to the conversation with the professor and Fred Meyer. Our oldest daughter came home from a class in middle school and proceeded to tell us that she was confused because her teacher told her that Columbus was a dirtbag. And how can that be, Mom? Because, wait, didn't we learn differently about who Columbus was and what his mission was and what he was supposed to do? And so that was kind of our first red flag, like, no. And so we kind of had to undo what that teacher had done. And then we had our son, when he too was in middle school, he said, so Mom, what's absolute truth? I said, what's true is true. And he said, well, I don't know. My English teacher said there's no absolute truth. It just depends on who you are as what is true. Oh, snap. No, son, remember, you know, kind of had a, felt like I had to undo that. Our daughter was, when she was in high school, she came home and, she said that her teacher in health class had said that when we get out of the home, then we can just choose our own morals. Like right now, we just like go along with whatever our parents have taught us. But when we leave home, we can really choose what we want to do. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, you can choose what you want to do, but certainly you understand and see the value of what we're teaching in the home and create that path for you. And then this same teacher, another day she came home and said, that when you leave your home, you can choose which flag you're going to fly, which sexual orientation you want to have. I was like, wow, this is in Shelley, Idaho. And, oh, wow, that's a little much. And then the final straw before we went and had a meeting with this teacher was an assignment to look through health magazines and find advertisements and critique them, how they used the persuasive elements for marketing to get you to buy their products, you know, typical marketing techniques. And she shared with me and my husband that there were some ads in there with mostly naked women just covering up appropriate parts to advertise health drinks. Like, your body could look like this if it was a health drink. Well, the boys in the classroom were taking pictures of this ad. Some were ripping them out of magazines. They were putting them in their backpack, and she was just kind of horrified. And she was a junior in high school. She went to her teacher and said, hey, you know, this is what was going on. And the teacher proceeded to tell her that she was oversensitized and that she needed to realize that that's advertising and it made its point. And these are my husband's magazines that he subscribes to, and he looks at them with our 8-year-old. So there's nothing in them that's questionable. You're just sensitized. You're sheltered. So she came home and told us all of this. So I called the school to get an appointment with her, this teacher, and the teacher did not return my call. So I called the superintendent. He said, well, we encourage parents to go talk to the teachers. I said, well, I tried that. She hasn't returned my call. We'll try again. So I called again and finally got through to her. I don't know if the superintendent got a message to her that you need to listen to this lady or what, but we ended up having a meeting with her, and she called the vice principal to be in there with us, and she denied it all. She said, I don't mean to call your daughter a liar, but I didn't say that. And Clarissa was there with us at this meeting, and she was very stunned that she was being called a liar, even though it was prefaced with, I don't mean to call your daughter a liar. And so with that kind of showing me, I just was overwhelmed. Like, I've got 6 of these kids, and how can I undo what they've gotten all day and do all the other things? And that's only what they told me about. What's happened that I don't know about? And of course, each time they tell me something and I set up a meeting with the teacher, it's like, note to self, don't tell mom because we don't want a meeting with the teacher. Well, the final straw that led to the conversation at Carl's Jr. was, our daughter was in 5th grade, and she came home and said that she needed some sealants in her teeth. I said, you need sealants in your teeth? What are you talking about? And she said, well, someone came to the school and looked at our teeth, and they determined that I need sealants in my teeth. And so on another day, they're going to come back and put sealants in my teeth. And I said, what are you talking about? She's like, I don't know. She doesn't know. She's 5th grade. So I called and I talked to the principal, and I found out that it was an opt-in, or you had to opt out. It was they came in, they looked at all the kids' teeth, they determined what dental health they needed, and that they were going to do it. If you have insurance, great. If not, you don't have, I can't even remember all the specifics. And I said, you did not have permission to look into my child's mouth. What if it was one of those mornings where it was like she didn't get her teeth brushed, and who knows what's in there? And am I going to get hauled away because I'm a bad parent because she didn't have her teeth brushed or whatever? My mind went wild. And there was in the news along this time a guy who got arrested because his children's poor teeth health. And I think God, he covered all the bases. He's a good guy. Anyway, so I had it out with the principal over the phone. Like, why would this be an opt out? Why not an opt in? Well, it's kind of like the maturation program. You know, we just do it. And if you don't want to do it, and I said, I don't think you should be teaching that either. I don't think that's your business to teach a little girl what's going on with her body, or a young boy, what's going on? No, that's my job. It should be an opt-in, not an opt-out. And then the next night we went to Carl's Jr. And I think actually it was that night, because I was telling McKay about the call that I just had with the principal. And we live in Shelley, Idaho. It's small. And these people, I go to church with them. I see them at Brolin's. Like, this is small. These are people. I'm having this conversation with a guy that we once lived by, you know? And it's hard to be weird, to not be normal like he talked about, right? And so hence the tears. While this was going on, we went home and we talked to our kids. And we said, this is what we're feeling, that we need to bring you home and start homeschooling. And this will be your last year in public school. Our oldest was a junior, and so she went ahead and stayed in public school, and she went to high school and graduated, but we brought everyone else home. And, I want to back up. Another thing, another seed that was planted for me to pursue this path. In 2008, I was pregnant with number five, and I listened to a talk by a man named M. Russell Ballard, and this is what he said. This led to the urgency of, wow, I have short time with my kids. If a child lives with parents for 18 to 19 years, that span is only a quarter of a parent's life. And the most formative time of all, the early years in a child's life, represents less than one-tenth of a parent's normal life. It is crucial to focus on our children for the short time we have with them and to seek with the help of the Lord to teach them all we can before they leave our homes. And my oldest was a year away from leaving. And all the things that people said, oh, it goes so fast, cherish it, all those things, I was like, yeah, whatever, you've forgotten. No, it was true. It goes so fast and they leave. And I was grasping, did I teach them what they need to know? Are they ready? Are they ready to meet this world? What did I miss? And so we brought them home. Our daughter finished public school as a senior that fall. Our second is a son. He was a freshman in high school. Third was a daughter. So she was sixth grade age. Our fourth son, third grade, fifth daughter, first grade, and our sixth is a daughter, and she was beginning preschool. And I call our oldest son Keegan. He's our guinea pig. He was our first to go through the Anderson Academy, our first homeschooler, and he's turned out great.
Yeah, he's my son-in-law.
Yeah. I text him, and I said, he's going to BYU Idaho. And I told him, I asked him, so what's the scholarship that you have? And he's on academic scholarship, BYU. I saw that he has a 4.0, and they said, we will pay for your tuition so long as you keep a 4.0. So, and he applied with his Anderson Academy transcript, and he took the ACT. And when they asked for a transcript, I said, well, write it down. What'd you learn? And he's like, I probably could have done better in biology. I think I better give me a B there. And he gave himself his grades, what he achieved. But bringing them all home was a lot. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I knew I didn't know what I was doing. And I had a lot of advice, well-meaning, but it was a lot. I was overwhelmed, and I brought public school home. And I sat them at the table, and from this time to this time, we're going to work on this. And from this time to this time, we're going to work on that. And I was talking to a friend who had homeschooled for quite a while. And she gave me this book. I don't know if I can. She sensed what I was doing. I don't know if I can hold the mic and.
It's not a microphone, it's just a recorder. So
oh.
You could just set it down.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Yeah. It just needs to pick up your voice.
I see. Okay, I'll just stand close to it. So she gave me this book to help me realize that you don't need to bring homeschool home. And I thought, wow, that's crazy. This is my home. And this is my school. What? Confused? Okay, allow me to explain. See, this is my mom and my sisters. Chaos. And these are my classmates and my teacher. Follow us. This is our classroom. I love how the illustrator, no straight lines. Very chaotic. This is another one of our classrooms. And this too. We have a lot of classrooms. And this is our cafeteria. Watch out, here comes the crabby cafeteria lady. We have a big playground.
But there's nowhere the school bully can't find you. He's such a beast. He gets that off. It's always, oh, of course we have a trusty school bus. It's always ready to take us to the library or on field trips. This is our art room. This is the world. Sometimes our teacher gets tired very easily. Oh no, she's calling for help. This is the substitute teacher. This is our dad. It's time for shop class. Then the sub helps us with our homework. And when our school gets lots of visitors, he leads phys ed. I guess sometimes the students get tired easily too. This is show and tell. And our dinner, our astronomy class, and our English lesson. Because this is my home. This is my school. This is my home. This is my school. And when she first gave it to me, I wasn't ready for it. It didn't click yet, but wow, now I can't read it without crying because this is what we've become. And this is where the beauty is when your homeschool looks like this. It's not rigid. It's not math starts at this time. It ends at that time. It's really grown to be a beautiful thing, a beautiful thing. But it started with doubt and fear. What if they don't understand evaporation? What if they can't name the planets in the solar system? What if they don't know when the Civil War began? What if they don't know the states, the United States? What does success look like? And I love how he talked about, we teach principles, to teach principles, not so much the knowledge. Like, I've been co-mentoring for the last few years the Civil War, the Key of Liberty, and Hero Project at our co-op. And I just learned, like, they don't need to know what day the shot was heard around the world. They need to know, why did those people do what they did? Why did they stand for religious freedom and leave their comforts and establish this nation? It's great if they know those United States, but what happened and why did people do what they did to create those United States? I so strongly believe in teaching principle that the so much that to the outside person, it might look like my kids don't know much. and that's where your why comes in, to figure out why you're doing what you're doing and to write it down. And you don't write it down once. You add to it. You add to it over time. And you see the good that comes from homeschooling your children to keep you going. Because we have those days where we're like, he said, throw the workbooks at them and check the box because I can't quite do it today. We have those days. I remember we were doing the family school, the Latter-day Learning Family School. And so we were all together doing the lessons, and then they have things broken down. Like if you're at this level, then you do these assignments. And so it trickles down, same lesson with different tasks for each age. And kids were not getting along. I shouldn't say fighting, but I mean, that's probably what you could call it. And I remember through tears saying to my oldest, who was breathing the air of his little sister, and her binder was open and it was in his way. And so he closed her binder and leave my binder alone and all that. And I said, stop. Like, can we just finish talking about the animal kingdom? And through tears, I said, you know, when people find out that we decided to homeschool, you know how they say, oh, wow, that good for you. I could never do that. And I said those words. I know exactly where I was on the walk with my friend when she said, decided to homeschool. Oh, wow, good for you. I could never do that. I need a break for my kid. I said it. And I said to them in the middle of this lesson through tears, you know when they say, oh, I could do that? That sounds so hard. This is why it's hard.
right here, right now. This is why it's hard, because you won't stop touching her, and who cares if your binder's not open, and just stop. Have you had these moments? Because they happen. They happen. And you know what? Those can go in your why too. But I have a why journal, and I add to it. And when I have successes, you better believe I write them down, because I want to remember. I want to remember.
You call it your why journal?
My why journal. And it's my reservoir to collect. So I looked up the definition of reservoir. A reservoir collects water during high flow periods. So you let it trickle and you keep it in your why journal. You write it down, because then you can, it allows you a consistent supply for the upcoming season. You go back to your reservoir when you've had that day where you lost it and you cried and you weren't bragging about your homeschool that day. You go to your reservoir and you read all your successes, and they're all in one spot. And you can tell by the handwriting how excited you are, because you just can't get it out fast enough. Like, oh my goodness, my daughter just asked if she can diagram more sentences. You can tell by your handwriting, and just like you know where you sat in Carl's Jr., just like you know where you were when this moment happened, as you read your handwriting, you'll get the feeling will come back. It will come back, and you will hold your head high, and you'll say, okay, this is my why. This is why I do it. This is why I don't quit. I can't quit. And then 10 years later, your guinea pig will be in college and married with a baby and killing it with a full tuition scholarship. Probably 2 months ago, our 16-year-old daughter was at a church activity, and she started getting questions from her leaders who don't understand homeschool. And it was somewhere along the lines of, well, what are you going to do? She was talking about how she wasn't going to graduate with a diploma. And they said, well, what are you going to do? Are you not going to go to college? She said, I don't know. I might be a nail tech. I don't know. I don't know yet. I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, well, you can't go to college if you don't have a diploma, a high school diploma, so you'll probably take the GED. She's like, well, no, like, Keegan didn't take the GED, and he's doing great in college. Oh, he took the GED. I don't think he did. And so she comes home, and she's telling me, so I'm like, no, he didn't. So how did he get into college? I said, he made himself a transcript, and he went to college. She's like, I knew it! I knew it! They said, yeah, he did. Go ask your mom. Go ask your mom. And she started doubting herself. She said, so mom, you need to tell them. You need to tell them. I said, you tell them. So she, at another time, she said, oh, I asked my mom, and no, he doesn't have a GED, and he's going to college. Really? I thought you had to have a GED or something to go to college. Right? It's the culture, right? So that can seep out. But anyway, it's a high flow moment, right? It's a high flow moment to see my son excelling in the education world. I just jotted down some of my high flow moments, and I want us to share. I want us to share some of our high flow moments. The first year we were doing homeschool, and it was a lot of public school at home, but fun too. I was worried that my kids wouldn't get to know the song Grandma's Feather Bed. I learned that in third grade, and I loved that song, and so I wanted to make sure that my kids knew Grandma's Feather Bed. And so we did a unit where we read this book. I wanted to find it, but I didn't go downstairs and find it. I can't remember the name of it, but it's this family. I think it's a homeschooling family. It was my friend who's holding my hand. And they talk about kind of the entrepreneur where they made stuff and then they went to the market and they sold it. And the lyric, it's the grandma, they have a grandma's feather bed. And so I taught my kids, it worked together. I taught my kids grandma's feather bed. I looked it up on YouTube. We sang it. They loved it. Well, my daughter just returned from her mission. She served in Nauvoo, Illinois. She was a historic sites missionary.
And in the program called Sunset at the Mississippi, if you've been to Nauvoo, they sing Grandma's Feather Bed. Mm. And on one of our calls, she's like, Mom, they sing Grandma's Feather Bed. And she's like, they didn't know it. The sisters, like the other sisters, didn't know. I was the only one who knew that song, and I was singing along. And I was like, yes, my full moment. Put it in my wife journal. That's going to keep me going. We studied the exploration of America, and we made a boat out of the dining room chairs in the front room, and we made swords and shields, and Leif Erikson discovered, and I have it on video, and my kids are just little and tiny, and I'm behind the iPad filming it, thinking, I hope I'm not ruining these kids. And now I watch it 10 years down the road, and I'm like, oh, you're not ruining them. This is awesome. Working with their siblings, like the principal, the skills that are being taught to work with your siblings. And there was squabbles, and there was no, I want to wear that hat. And I mean, oh my goodness, the Afghan draped around for the cape. And I should have found it and brought it and showed you, because it is just a gem. And my kids may know who they are. Let's see, what else? Oh, chemistry experiments, going long into the night. At our co-op, my son took a chemistry class last year, so he was 17. And he decided to figure out the water solubility of Gatorade. And he stayed up, I'm not kidding, 2 o'clock in the morning, I go out there, because the light, I think, oh, he's gone to bed and the lights are still on. I go out there, and I can hear the tinkling on the glass of him stirring. And he's adding little by little. And you know what he learned? I should have started at a higher, like I started too low. But the principles that are learned to finish, to stick it through, to not give up. I mean, who cares what the solubility of Gatorade is? And he did learn that some flavors are more soluble than others. Isn't that interesting? But I mean, the principles that are being learned. High flow moment. High flow moment. The choir that sang. My daughter was in that choir, and my son should have been, but he had a wrestling tournament today.
Yes, he should have.
The songs that this woman has had that choir, and all my kids have been a part of it. My baby is next year, and she's bonching. She can't wait to be 14 so she can be in Lynn's choir. They sing about God, about Jesus. Those of you who are weary, come home, right? Are we weary as home educators? Yes, we are. But this is where we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be home. I'm so grateful for the high flow moments that have come from that choir. And Activate is a drama program that our co-op puts on. And our daughter, who just returned home from her mission, they did her senior year, they did a play of World War II. And God was all over in that play. All over. And her monologue that she gave in that play, I'm sure, I should have asked her, I'm sure she still hasn't memorized. But I love that we can pray. We started our Key of Liberty classes with a prayer every week. This semester and last semester, I taught a class at our co-op. We call it Let's Serve. And we have 14 kids that have taken it, and we do service projects all semester. And last semester we had a guest speaker come to share with the service project that she started when her 2-year-old son was killed in a car accident. And now she does Luke's Loves, because he loved his blankie, and she collects blankies and takes them to primary children's. And when I went to high school with her, and I just see on Facebook that she does this. And so I messaged her. She lives in Preston. And I said, would you come and present at our homeschool co-op about this? And she said, yeah, that'd be great. Can I talk about God? I said, absolutely. She said, because really, that's what led this. That's how I've come to be doing this, is because God told me to, and this is what I'm doing. Absolutely, Jan. God is in it, for sure. This semester, we're having a guest speaker who started a food pantry in Shelley, And she was my visiting teaching partner at church years ago. And she asked the same thing. Okay, can we talk? Hey, thanks. She said, okay, can I talk about God? I said, please do. We're Christians. God is a part of our education. Please include him. She's like, yeah, because he's the one that led to all of this. I said, for sure. What are some of your high flow moments in your homeschooling? Have any come to mind as I've been sharing some of mine that you'd be willing to share with us? Yeah, Lindsay.
Just this year, my 11-year-old with came home and was playing with one of her best friends who doesn't come to school. She was like, no, she does not even know who Abigail Adams is. Can you believe that? And I was thinking, I didn't even know you knew who Abigail Adams was. And I had had her be reading, like, each day just very small snippets of, like, from history, from revolutionary or era. And it was just really cool. She, like, went off, like, she doesn't know who JFK is. She doesn't know Abigail Adams. What should they teach him at that school? It was just really cute. Like, the first time for her to vocalize, like, seeing how valuable it was what she was learning and seeing, like, oh my goodness, she needs that in her life. So that was definitely
that
moment for me.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, that she saw the value.
Yeah.
And was worried about her friend. She was like, she needs to know about these important people.
Yeah, that's huge. Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Anyone else?
I will.
Yeah.
So I started a year ago saying that, well, I became a stay-at-home mama because it was way too expensive to keep a job that was temporary anyway. And so mine were 4, 3, and 2. And I started with their 5, 4, and 3 now. So I'm like, kindergarten, let's do kindergarten. And I wanted to bring school to set the table. And I'm like, this is so hard. Because I love to learn. So that was the way I learned. So that's how we should learn.
Right.
So I'm doing all of that. But
yeah.
My kindergartner, I'm like, we are not conquering the ABCs. We are just not conquering the ABCs. So I just felt like I needed to really take it slow with him. And so a few months into the beginning of a quote, post-school year, right? I put quotations because it's all general. I just stepped back, and he was able to vocalize to me that he needed glasses. So I was like, cool, let's get glasses. That took some process, you know, get some glasses. Things got a little bit easier. Just, again, continuing to take it slow with him. All of a sudden, he's writing ABCs and all sorts of stuff on the whiteboard, and he's like, what's this say? Is it a word? What's this say? So, I mean, for me to just kind of slow down instead of push, you have to read, reading, you have to know your letters, like, I'm like, let's just slow down. I'm like still fighting that like a mom guilt of like, oh, I am probably not going to have a reader by the end of this whatever semester it is. But like, it's just realizing that we can teach our kids where they are instead of that streamline of the have to, like, has been so freeing. And then his sister is like playing on a leapfrog and says the letter before the leapfrog does, and I'm like, girl, you have a lot of letters there. So just watching that slow consistency that I have just start to grow and like spurt itself and show itself in themselves has been super encouraging to me.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
So I have a lot of dyslexia in my family that I didn't figure it out for quite a few kids. But my most dyslexic child, I am so grateful that he homeschooled, because he has grown up with still confidence, that he is smart, that he can do whatever he needs, and he started college, and he's got straight A's in college, because now you can get programs that they read you for everything.
Yeah.
So he's flourished, and I know it is because since we homeschooled, he was not tagged as slow, or, oh, you can't read, you must be dumb. So that's been... Oh, I had another daughter, though, who's also... But we dual enrolled through high school, and she came home and said, Mom, I found out I'm smart. And I thought, hey, what am I between wrong? You're smart. But it was an eye opener to her that she found that she realized it's because, don't you think, as homeschoolers, we always find what's wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I'm really bad at that. You just pull out what they're doing wrong. But I don't know what happened, but she realized she was smart. And so, and so this is my daughter getting her master's degree with all A's, and it's just, if we could just mold that brain into knowing that they can do whatever they want, then.
And we have to take the mom, and she has to remember too.
Yes.
I have to remember my why. Because I can slip and get into this rut and get panicked. Like, oh my gosh, oh, you should know. Oh, what have I done wrong? What did I do wrong? How did I fail? La, 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 la. Satan, 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 jerk, 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 dirt back. Kick him to the curb. Go to your why journal and remember. Just remember. Yeah.
I just, sitting here, I was like, well, nothing goes right. So I don't have anything.
You're here, Mom. That's right.
I'm not the person that, like, dreamed of this and wanted to
no.
do it. And it was, I was more of a, like, crying, no, please stop.
That's
anyway,
not what you meant, right?
So, yeah, I have six children. And so when I started with five and a newborn baby with health problems and was drowning and didn't ever sleep. And I would go to sleep obsessed with it. And my husband would wake up in the morning and I would have all these new ideas. And he was like, we literally were sleeping. And I was like, you were sleeping. I was nursing the baby and I was on the internet and I was working anyway. So
yeah.
I'm kind of a crazy person. It's okay. Anyway. So I have just a couple short little things I wanted to share. There was one time when I actually trusted myself to do the project instead of the curriculum.
Uh-huh.
And I had this idea. And so we had been reading all kinds of books. I realized that stories are what my kids, anyway, so we did literature-based stuff, and we had been studying about early American history, and I made them eat all of the terrible food. I was so excited. It was going to taste terrible. It was all, like, cornmeal-based food for, like, the 1700s, and so we only ate that, and we used electricity to do it and all that, but as soon as it was time, we turned off all the lights, and we burned the candles I made them hand-dip, and we watched all their work just burn in like 30 minutes. And it was fantastic. So I was like, well, you better make more candles tomorrow because that's the only way we're seeing tomorrow night. And they were like, this isn't even good food. And I was like, isn't it amazing how hard they worked for terrible food? And it was just so great to see them. And they still have this connection to that time period and those stories they read, because we read a book where they talked about hasty pudding and she dumped it in faster because she's like, they're messing with me. And she dumped it in, and they had chunky, pasty pudding for a week because they didn't put it in a pinch at a time. And anyway, so my kids, they realized how hard it was to work off the land and stuff like that, and that was really cool. We had another history experience where just a week or two ago where we were reading about a girl who, their fort was being attacked by the natives, and she was 14, and she ran back into the fort, and all the kids, or all the adults, a man was going to blow the whole fort up because better to blow up than to be taken by the natives. And she was like, get out of here. And she was 14, her 12-year-old and her 10-year-old brother, and then they found some 80-year-old man, ran the four quarters for 8 days, and they held the fort.
Oh, wow.
For everybody. It was a French, they still have a holiday about it, I guess. It was a French colony in Canada. Anyway, and it turned into a conversation about what would I do to protect others.
Wow.
And my son was like, well, I already know that mom, if somebody came to hurt us, mom would, it got really, you know, he's a tween boy. He was like, she'd have bullet holes and she'd still be fighting. She'd have, you know, and I was like, yeah, sure, I would do anything for you, buddy. And it was really cool because my 16-year-old was like, she came in and got caught into it, and she said, you know, I don't know if I'd be brave enough to do that. And I said, well, maybe you just have to decide to be brave enough to do that if somebody else needs you. And she was like, yeah, you know what, maybe I could do that. I could be that for somebody else. And I was like, you know what, the history doesn't matter right now. Sorry.
No, right.
I need to help other people. And it was a really cool moment because I was drowning.
Yes.
And then they were like, mom would protect us and we could protect others. I'm only 10. I can protect others. I can pull down the fort for 8 days from a tribe of natives if I have to protect. She like rounded up all the women and children and put them in a room because they were scared and said, we don't want them knowing you're scared. So you be in here where they can't hear you and we'll protect you. And they were children. And I was like, that's so cool. Anyway. And then the last one that I felt like I needed to share. Sorry. I've got the buckets. I just moved to Cache Valley, Logan,
yeah.
area, and but I lived in Salt Lake, and my kids, two of my kids, I have one daughter that's in One Voice Children's Choir, and then another one that the day that she was cast in One Voice Children's Choir was the day that we signed the contract to get a new job and move to Logan. And I was like, I can't, they've worked so hard. I don't know who knows what voice you describe, but it's hard to get into. I said, I feel so strongly they need to do this. And so I started driving them down from Logan to Salt Lake multiple times a week for these rehearsals. And I just have been feeling so guilty that I leave some of my kids behind and I'm not being the parent to them because I'm being the parent to them and I'm choosing favorites and all this stuff. And it's taking up so much of their life and they don't have as much of a social life or they don't have much of this because they're in the car so much. Because we really drive, it's about 4 hours a day, two times a week, plus the rehearsal time that I'm down there. I'm gone 6 hours twice a week and that's a lot of time. And I went to a performance that they had and I just had this spirit hit really strong. But anyway, I just was so overcome with all of the things that they were learning and I was hit with all these other things that were not related to the performance, like my 16-year-old reading to me the texts of her and another boy. And I mean, like, they're like flirting it up and stuff, and she's reading me all the texts. And I'm like, all this time I'm spending with her matters. And this education she's getting through her choir, she's learning. I started thinking about all the different experiences she's getting in this choir. And I was like, okay, maybe the sacrifices are worth it. Because my husband's just like, well, that's a lot of gas. Maybe you should stop. And I'm
like a
guy. Yeah, right? Yeah. And so anyway, there are times where I'm like, I feel strongly I need to do this, but then I think I'm crazy. And it's only after, and I mean, my husband thinks I'm crazy. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. I got no support in it, but except for the girls that wanted to do it.
Right.
But anyway, it just hit me that there are things they can get from places other than I learned this song.
Right.
And I have to be reminded of that because I do worry about the benchmarks and stuff. Like, I try to not follow state standards or things like that, but I also am like, but they don't know enough.
Right.
Don't
you
know
go there. You slip to that. You slip to that. But I love that because it looks different, right? You can't graph this. He was talking about the charts, you know. You can't graph this on a piece of paper. You can check off, I know my three times tables, I know my fours. You can check that off and you can look at that and pat yourself on the back and yay, we're exceeding. Can you check off? My 6-year-old just said, I think I could choose to be brave enough to help someone. You can't chart that. Heather.
Okay, but even more than that, I love when your child said, Mom would have bullet holes and she would still be protecting us. Think about what that's doing for your kids.
Yeah.
I hear so many moms say, oh, I can't wait for my kids to go back to school so I don't have to
deal
with them all day.
They say it all the time.
Yeah.
Think about what those youth are hearing. And your youth is hearing something very different because he knows that's powerful.
Right, isn't it? Isn't your voice... Scout just tingles.
And that's why your 16-year-old can choose to be brave.
Right.
Because she knows that she's not alone.
Yeah.
She's got somebody on her.
And there is beauty in this, in a community. All these feelings I was having, the panic of, oh my goodness, they're going to be gone before I know it. And have I taught them enough? And I need more time with them. I thought it was weird. Because all I had heard was, good grief, when is this Christmas break going to be over and get these kids out from under my feet? I thought I was alone. But then my friend who gave me this book, she told me about our co-op and I found a community. And there are so many of us weird people who feel this passion, who know that homeschooling is a good idea. I like the idea of homeschooling. Lindsay told me that once. That, you know what, you can take the leap and make that idea real and ride the ride, but record your high flow moments.
So when you're in the trough.
You're in the trough, when you're in the drought, when you're in the desert, you can refill and get that strength to keep going. The video I was going to show, I won't take the time. It's a high flow moment for. Actually, let's just try.
It's not here yet.
Oh shoot!
So
oh, she did something. I forgot you had a part.
Not really. I don't really know what I'm doing. and then
it just takes a minute.
We just got to give the computer.
So, this is a high flow moment for a mom, and when you get like zoned into this. To this way of thinking, whenever you see other people's high flow moments, guess what? They become yours because you're like, we're all in this together. You get me. You get me. Oh, there's lots of people who get me. Yes.
But sometimes it brings you down because you think, I'm not that good.
Yes,
I'm
you can't.
So you have to be really careful.
You have to be careful. Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. My husband, when I was saying, oh my goodness, they want me to do this. I accepted this a year ago, this invitation to present here. My daughter's getting married in 3 weeks. I don't have time for this. There's so many people who could do it better. All the Satan crap over here. He said, I have an idea for you. And he showed me this. My husband likes disc golf.
Growing up, playing baseball, basketball, football, my dad really wanted me to go down that path and pursue his dream of maybe being a professional baseball player. I had a different mindset. I really wanted to play disc golf. I really wanted to play disc golf. I wanted to be a touring player. I wanted to pick up sponsors. I wanted to eventually be a world champion. So being homeschooled allowed me the time to play disc golf, practice a lot more than most of my friends and local club members. I think going to high school really, there's a lot of wasted time. Whereas when you're homeschooled, you take the classes you want. So first going on tour, I was 17. My main goal was to prove my dad wrong.
This is just all hugs and hand pounds. There's a real fan. There's a Mr. Waisaki there.
Yeah, fans play a big part. They boost my confidence, and it's really cool to see people support. And I really thrive off of that. So I'm thankful and grateful to have people that help me be confident on the course. A foundational habit that I realized from the beginning was muscle memory. Muscle memory is key to my success. I used to go to the course, practice for 4 or 5 hours a day, and I still do that. I'll go and throw 3 or 4 drives, 3 or 4 putts, and 3 or 4 upshots on every hole. One thing that's changed dramatically is my mindset. I think that I've seen a lot of the different situations on tour, and I've learned from my maybe rookie mistakes, so to say, and I've built myself mentally and physically to get to a point like the World Championships where I really feel like I have a chance to win every time. I spend at least 45 minutes a day dialing in my putts from all different distances, anywhere from 10 feet to 100 feet.
That's crazy.
The most stable part of my game is forehand approach. I think throughout my career that's been the shot I can count on no matter what.
Crazy. This is Ricky Waisaki. He's the top earner in 2024 in disc golf with his $1 million annual sponsorship deal and strong tournament performances. Waisaki remains one of the sport's top earners, bringing in over $1.3 million in combined earnings this year. Outside, that's not normal. That's not normal to make over $1 million being a disc golfer. I mean, that's just something you found a park with some of those thingies in it and you played around, right? But the mindset, and I don't know this guy, right?
And I don't know what his homeschool really looked like, but he's learned a few principles, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's learned a few principles, and he got to choose his education. Like, I was public schooled, and one of my biggest gripes, even my college experience, was, can I just study what I want to study? Why do you want me to read Moby Dick? I don't want to read Moby Dick. Let me choose what I learn. You're going to take 8 hours of my day and tell me what I have to learn? And do we have the most success with our kids as we educate them when we let them lead out on their education? Oh, I don't fight my son to do math. My 18-year-old, I never say anything to him about math. That kid loves math, and he is doing it. And he wants to do something with math now for his life. And I would never have passed out. I hate math. But wow, this mom, this kid is a high flow moment that he studied what he wanted to, and it made him a millionaire. And we can be successful as the moms as we record our high flow moments and our reservoir, our why journals, and tap into it. And you know what? As much as you need. If you're tapping into that reservoir every day, do it. But make sure you fill it. You've got to record your successes and use your hand. Write it in your handwriting. Those emotions come through. You can't write fast enough. The dialogue that you'll have with your 3-year-old, the dialogue you'll have with your 10-year-old, because you'll forget if you don't. I go to my journal and I'm like, oh my goodness, that was the best. I forgot. How could you forget it was the best? So know your why. Remember your why. And you'll fly. You'll fly. Your kids will fly. And your life will be a high flow life. Thanks.
Yeah. Right? Okay, now I gotta get those cookies made. For the reception.
Up to the wedding.
Thank you. That was excellent.
Thank you.